Calling all small firm architects. It's time to tap into your full potential with Entree Architects Context and Clarity, where inspiration meets innovation. Hey, it's Mark R. LePage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my two favorite co-hosts, Jeff Eccles and Katie Kangas, as they bring together authors, experts, and thought leaders for electric conversations with entrepreneur architects around the globe. It's not just a podcast. It's a community where dreams meet action.
There is a simple equation there. And what for me, what that did, just doing that basic calculation, was it allowed me to compare what I had actually saved in my retirement accounts to what I thought a possible projected annual spend might be.
Artists are temperamental, so beautiful design is going to be a priority. When the job is done, we're going to actually need to live in the house, not live with the person who designed it. And so for me, the artistic skill, the architectural skill is most important. And so I would say like that would be 60% of it, if not more.
Gain insights to build a successful practice. Subscribe, engage, and let's redefine your future together. Join the Context and Clarity community, where every conversation adds to your blueprint for success. You are listening to Entree Architect Podcast, so that makes you a member of our dedicated community of small firm architects. Come join us on Facebook. I think you're going to love this, the Entree Architect community. It's our free private Facebook group. If you are an architect, request free membership right now at entrearchitect.com/group. You are listening to Entree Architect Podcast, and this is episode 215. Welcome back to Entree Architect Podcast. My name is Mark R. LePage, and this is the podcast dedicated to a successful life as a small firm entrepreneur architect. Whether you have plans to someday start your own firm, you're in the process of launching a startup, or you may be an experienced small firm architect just like me, just trying to make a difference, this podcast is for you. My goal is to inspire you to build a better business so that you may pursue your purpose with passion and live the life of your dreams. If you are interested in becoming an architect developer, this is the episode that you've been waiting for. This week at Entree Architect Podcast, a step-by-step guide to becoming an architect developer with Danny Cerezo of CS Design. This episode of Entree Architect Podcast is supported by our platform sponsors, RCAT, the online resource delivering quality building material information, CAD details, BIM, specifications, and much more at rcat.com, and FreshBooks, the cloud-based accounting software that makes running your small firm easy, fast, and secure. Spend less time on accounting and more time doing the work that you love. Danny Cerezo, welcome back to Entree Architect Podcast.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you for having me back.
Yeah, it's good to have you back. You're a good friend. You're a member of Entree Architect Academy for a long time. You're constantly sharing your knowledge, and I love that. And so thank you for coming back. You've been here before. You've been here on episode 126, sharing your successful technologies for an architect startup, talking all about different software packages that you use to run your firm. That's episode 126, if anybody's interested in going back to listen to that. Let me introduce you to the people who may not know who you are. Danny Cerezo is originally from New York City, not too far from me, a couple minutes from me here. But a long time ago, moved to the other end of the world. He went to LA, and he's been there ever since, in Los Angeles, California. Received a bachelor's degree in architecture from USC, and a master's degree from Woodbury, San Diego, where he studied under architect developers Jonathan Siegel, which most people who are listening to this podcast probably know who Jonathan Siegel and Ted Smith, both sort of famed architect developers, or infamous, depending on how you look at them. Jonathan, especially Jonathan. And Danny's also a licensed general contractor and has recently started a contracting firm with a development partner. And he's now designing and building, and I think you're at the end stages, right, of a development project as an architect. And then we're going to talk about that today. We're going to talk about architect developer. It's a topic that listeners are constantly talking about, constantly requesting. Everybody's, as an architect, I don't know if everybody, but the majority of small firm architects in our community sort of fantasize about the idea of not only designing and building, but developing yourself, you know, creating your own projects, and going through the process of building it and financing it and profiting from it. And so it's exciting to have you here. You also did a masterclass, one of our masterclasses inside Entree Architect Academy for our private membership. Any members out there who are listening, you have access to that session. I think it was back in March of 2017. Danny went through the whole process of architect developer and you can check that out at the masterclass archives. So you can go check that out. So Danny, I'm not going to go, because you were here episode 126, you did a full origin story, talked about how you got to where you are. But talk about a little bit about who you are, sort of introduce yourself, introduce your firm and what you're doing, and then we'll roll right into architect developer.
So we're a small firm, very much like you guys, husband and wife firm here in LA. And around 2008, I decided that I wanted to pursue the architect as developer route. And so I did attend that that 1 year grad program with Jonathan Siegel. And so today what we do is we're kind of, you know, 1 foot in one world and 1 foot in the other. So we still practice like a traditional small firm where we do projects, you know, quote unquote, for Mr. and Mrs. Jones. And then in the other half of our time, we spend partnering with developers and doing our own projects. And I mean, that's essentially how we operate here at CS Design.
Yeah. The first thing I want to ask you is, sure, you went from traditional architecture, which is what I'm doing and many of our listeners are doing, and you had this idea, you had this dream of becoming an architect developer. Before we get into the nuts and bolts of it, let's talk a little bit about the psychology of it. How did you get past the idea? How did you take that leap? How did you jump off the cliff, essentially, to become an architect developer? How did you get past the psychology of making that big decision to just do something you're comfortable with to actually pulling the trigger on this?
Okay. I have to go back a little bit. So for those who may have heard the previous episode, I was in the Navy for quite a while. I got out in 2006. And I went to work through a professor of mine from USC. I went to work for a developer. And I saw what they were doing a huge project, a master development, you know, not just a small little, you know, 4-unit project like the one we're going to talk about today. And I saw what developing, you know, I got a little taste of what developing was all about. And I think, you know, living here in LA, you see so much development that is not necessarily attractive development. And so, I don't know, I started saying to myself, why doesn't somebody develop something a little bit nicer, you know, or a little bit more architecturally, you know, significant. And then that kind of led into, well, you know, why can't I do that? Why don't architects do that? And then I don't know if it was through Google or through talking to colleagues, but I found out that, you know, there were these people out there who were architects and developers. And I've always been the kind of guy that says, well, you know, what's the worst that could happen? You know, but, you know, I go work for a big firm 9 to 5. I mean, if this doesn't go very well for me. So I said, well, let's just take the plunge and see what could happen. So I worked part time while attending the grad program for this developer, and I haven't looked back since. And it's been working very well. It's just a matter of basically saying, you know, what's the worst that could happen?
Yeah.
And just going for it.
Yeah. Yeah. Educating yourself and sort of just jumping. Yeah. My first episode of the podcast, it's episode zero, you know, right. And it talks about, it was my 12-12-12 project, was relaunching Entree Architect and starting this podcast. Right. And that was my philosophy too. You know, what's the worst that could happen? Let's just jump off the cliff and,
exactly.
you know, and learn how to fly as you're going.
Exactly.
You know? And that's
you just got to go for it.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, the end result is going to be good. And there's going to be tough times, and there's going to be failures, and there's going to be things that you don't want to happen, but it will never happen if you don't start it. And if
that's
you don't
exactly
try.
Right. That's exactly
so
right.
It's a good message. So where do we start? Let's say, you know, people are here to listen to they want to jump off that cliff. Where do they start? What's the first thing they should do?
And in my particular case, and for those who attended the masterclass, you know, I don't have any money. I you know, didn't have an inheritance or anything like that I could you know, fall back on or anything like that. So I knew. I mean, here I was in 2009. I graduated, so now I had this knowledge, and I wanted to do this. And the question was how. I didn't have any money. So the natural thing for me to do, and it's what I recommend that those are in the same position as me do, is to find a partner, someone that you can partner with. And in my particular case, this developer that I had gone to work for was willing to do that, was willing to kind of do some smaller projects. And they obviously had the funds and the equity to you know, do these projects. And so, I mean, so basically what I'm saying is find somebody that has money. And I know that's maybe easier said than done, but that's how I did it. So that's why I'm saying, you know, that's what I suggest people do. And you may not know who has that equity or that funding or the willingness to do that. It could be a previous client. Could be a relative or a friend. You know, it really depends. But that's how I got started.
It doesn't have to be a developer. I mean, you happen to partner with a developer, right. Somebody who has experience. But it, you know, it could be Aunt Sally. You know, Aunt Sally's got right. you know, a couple hundred thousand sitting in the bank, and you know, she wants to help you out. You know, all you need is the money, right?
And it could be a very simple project at the beginning. It could be a simple, you know, a flip where you buy something, you're fixing it up, maybe adding some square footage to it, and then you turn it around for a profit. And that just starts to build momentum. You start to build a network and connections, and, you know, you'll get to where you're trying to go.
Yeah. So if you identify a few people who potentially could become partners, how do you prepare yourself as the architect to show them that you have the skills and the ability to take their money and turn it into more money?
Yeah, this is a much harder task. Yeah. And in my particular case, it was obviously that program that I took at Woodbury. But you have to learn how to walk the walk and talk the talk. So you have to learn, you know, the fundamentals of real estate development. You have to learn how to do a pro forma. You have to learn how to talk about risks. And what are the different, you know, potential pitfalls that the project could have? You have to be familiar with comps. If you're going to do Project X, you have to be able to talk about, well, what other Project X's are being done and how are they doing? And maybe your idea is crazy. So you have to definitely build up a base set of tools and knowledge in order to be able to convince them. And you know, the number one tool is obviously the pro forma, which is basically just, you know, if we put in $1 and we get out $2, then we've made $1. You know, it's obviously much more complex than that, but you need to somehow figure out a way to convey that to the people that you're hoping will fund your development.
And you've written a series on this process on Medium.
Yes.
Super valuable, super interesting. It's at medium.com/@, the at symbol, at CS Design LA. So you can search that, CS Design LA, and you'll find Danny's, he breaks it down step by step all the way through the process. So I would definitely suggest that you go there and check that out. So you can, you have to educate yourself. You have to understand what you're going to do and how you're going to do it. You need to put together a pro forma and what that is. And you can get that through, you know, Jonathan Siegel has a program that he offers. There are universities that offer programs that show you how to do development. There's online versions that do it. Danny's series teaches quite a bit about that. But so you need to understand that. Could you just really quickly explain for the people who don't know? I didn't know when I first started what a pro forma is, and how, you know, you don't have to get into the details of it, but basically, sure. What is it?
A pro forma is just—it's typically a spreadsheet, an Excel spreadsheet, which basically shows what it would cost to do project X, where that money comes from, what the return will be on that project, and where that money comes from—either a rental project or a for sale project—and then what everybody gets, what's their split. That's essentially it in a nutshell. It's you know, how much are you putting in, how much are you getting out. And is it 60-40, 50-50, 70-30, whatever it is. And of course, there's a lot of formulas and there's a lot of data that goes into that, but that's essentially what it is.
Yeah, it's a storyboard, right?
That's right.
It's a spreadsheet storyboard. It's the story of your project from the very beginning to the very end. How is it going to happen? Where's the money going to come from? Where's the money going to go? What's going to come out the other end? And who's going to get it all?
It basically says this is going to be an amazing project. And here's why. Yeah. And it's the numbers.
And it has to say that. That has to be the story.
Right.
Because if it doesn't, then it doesn't work.
That's right.
And nobody's going to invest in
that's right.
And it has to be truthful. You know, it can't be a fictional story.
That's correct.
It has to be a factual story. Okay, great. So we put together we gained that knowledge. We've put together the pro forma. We've identified someone. We've convince them that we're going to do this through the knowledge that we have and the pro forma that we have. What's the first step? Do we go out and start digging, or do we need some land, right? I mean, that's probably the first step. So how do we acquire that land? How do we identify it, and then how do we actually get it?
Yeah, that could be a whole course right there on market acquisition and whatever. One thing is I would suggest is to stay local. Jonathan Siegel has a great quote: "If you can't get to it in 15 minutes, it's too far." And that's because you really are familiar with the 15 minutes around you. You know what's going up, what's going down, what neighborhood is hot, what corner is good. You know those kinds of things. And then once you find the land. And typically, you know, it's not going to be a for sale sign or something like that. You may have to use real estate agents and approach the current owner. You know, there's a million ways to try to, you know, reach out to a seller to get it. But then it comes down to, okay, so you find this lot, like in the case of this one project that we're doing, it was two lots, total value, $1.4 million. And obviously we didn't have $1.4 million. And so you have to borrow the money. And in this particular case, there were two loans. One was given through the seller and the other one was given through the bank. And you can get as creative as you want with how you acquire the land, but that's really the first step. And I wouldn't suggest paying all cash. You know, that's just not smart. You want to leverage the money that you have, the small equity that you do have. And in this particular case, that's how we did it. So we got an interest-only loan for one of the lots. And then the other one, as I said, was seller financing, which basically the seller, you know, deeds you the land and then you have to pay them back in a certain amount of time.
So they basically hold a mortgage instead of the bank. They still own it and you're going to pay it off over time.
Correct.
And so these are two adjacent lots. Is that what
these are two adjacent lots, which we then so they each had a single family. Well, one was half demolished, but they basically each had a single family home, and we were now going to do four single family homes.
So you're going to build a multi-unit building.
Actually, no, they're fee simple homes. So each one is, you know, we're subdividing the land as well. So it's a little bit more of an intensive process. So that way you could literally buy one lot and one home. So we're turning two lots into four lots.
Got it. Okay. Got it. All right. And so that that's one of the benefits of 15 minute perimeter is because you know the zoning of that area too.
That's
so you
right.
can go see that. You can see those two lots. You know, because you're familiar with the zoning code, that those two lots are oversized. They can be subdivided. Those two lots can become four lots. And 15 minutes is about, I don't know, 10, 15 mile perimeter, right? If you draw a circle around where you are. That's 15 right. minutes, it's, you know, it's about 15 yeah. miles away. Yeah. So you can get a sense of what's around you within 15 minutes, within 15 miles, to see what, you know, where you might start looking for those properties.
And in this particular, I remember when the developer, who's a friend of mine, his name is John, came to me and said, you know, these two lots were available, and this was all, it wasn't on the market. It was, you know, I guess you can call it a pocket listing. The amount of analysis that you have to do really fast at the beginning is something that you get good at as you go. So we looked at the lot. Okay, we did the proverbial little napkin sketch. How many can we fit? What's the square footage? You know, and then quickly saying, okay, well, it's going to cost this much to build, and it's basically a mental pro forma. And then they can sell for this much, and they can, and you say, okay, well, this is going to work, or no, I don't think this is going to work. You have to do that very quickly at the beginning, especially knowing that there are other developers and whatnot that are out there. Also, you know, this is Los Angeles, a very competitive place. So, you know, those lots weren't going to be available forever. So those skills, as you do one project, as you do the next project, will get refined, and you'll get much better at them as you go.
Yeah,
and in this particular case, the numbers worked.
Yeah. Which is why it's so important to have that education up front.
Right.
You can't say, oh, there's a piece of property. Let me go back to the office and look up right. what I need to know, and then start yeah. doing the calculations and the spreadsheet, and then go back and say, oh, here's, and then put the offer in. Well, it's already gone. The developer
gone.
Who did it
it's
in
gone.
His head offered the money, and they bought it.
That's right.
Yeah. So you go through that process. You do that mental calculation. You see that it's a good value. So what do you do now? Do you just put in a verbal offer, or do you
in this particular case, it was through the agents and through the two sellers, and you can give them a verbal offer. It's better to give them like a letter of intent or an offering in writing, just kind of setting out the terms. You know, I'm willing to give you this much and pay this much interest and pay you back. In this case, they each were going to be paid back in 12 months. One of the good things was that one of the homes had some renters in them who were paying $3,000 a month to live there. And if you took the interest only loan, the monthly payment, and then the seller finance monthly payment, it was less than $3,000. So it was almost, you know, you didn't yeah. even have to put out money during those 12 months to basically tie up these two lots. It was just a very fortunate set of events there.
How did you go about with the owner financing? Was that something that you proposed in your proposal, or is that something that was being advertised that it was available for owner financing?
I don't think it was being advertised, and this is more a question for John. He was more intimate into that conversation with this particular person. But I would bet, knowing John, that he brought it up.
Yeah, he understood that was a possibility.
Correct. Correct.
In the proposal, you with some finesse, offer that as part of
yes.
the part of the deal,
yeah.
probably in the process of negotiation. So he's getting something, you're getting something.
Without getting too much into seller financing, the advantage to the seller is that if you're selling a lot for $1 million, I can give you $1 million today. But if you do seller financing and you just wait a little bit, you'll get your $1 million plus.
Plus interest, right?
Plus, if you can just wait a little bit, and in this case, it was 12 months.
Yeah, and that's one of the benefits of partnering up with somebody like John, who's
right.
done it, who knows the world, you know, knows the network. That's
right.
why it's important. You had mentioned before
that's
building
right.
your network and who you know and what you know, because those are the, and you said, you know, the pocket property. That's an
correct.
Unlisted piece of property
correct.
That's for sale. That's not listed. It's not on the multiple listing. So the agents don't know it yet. So you can jump in there and grab that piece of property before it ever is advertised.
I definitely could not have done this without partnering. There's just no way. And I think that's definitely one takeaway that I would like people to get from the podcast, is that unless you already have just $2 million burning a hole in your pocket somewhere, you probably should try to partner and partner with the right person. So that way, you know, you can take off.
Yeah. And it's not forever. Right. It's
no,
the partnering
no.
is to get started. It's a jump
sure.
start.
Right? That's right. Yeah.
So you do one or two projects with a partner mm-hmm. and you mm-hmm. eventually evolve into having enough funding yourself, having enough knowledge yourself, having a big enough network to do it yourself.
Yeah.
But it's a great way to to get in, it's really the only way to successfully do this is to start with somebody who knows what they're doing, has that experience, has that leverage, and partner with them. Let's take a quick break to say thank you to our platform sponsors here at Entree Architect, RCAT, and FreshBooks. For years, when I needed information on manufacturers' products, I headed straight to the internet, straight to google.com. And then I sifted through the hundreds of results, maybe thousands of results, to find the one or two that might be the link that I'm looking for. And more often than not, it wasn't. It wasn't what I was looking for, or it was outdated, or it didn't meet my requirements. So what do? I go back to the search engine and I start all over again. And this could take all afternoon to find the one or two or three products that I'm looking for. Does this sound familiar? Do you do this? There is a better way. Our friends at RCAT. RCAT.com, A-R-C-A-T. Find what you're looking for in seconds. Building, product information, BIM, CAD, custom specifications using their exclusive tool, SpecWizard, and keep it all online right there in one place using their cloud-based project organization tool, Charette. Here's an idea. Make RCAT a part of your efficient project workflow. Use it on every project. Just type in entrearchitect.com/RCAT. That's entrearchitect.com/RCAT. Type that into your internet browser and add it to your favorites. And then on every project, use RCAT. Just click that link. You'll go straight to RCAT and you'll find everything that you're looking for in seconds. Find what you need fast and make more money on every project. entrearchitect.com/RCAT. FreshBooks makes it simple to send invoices, post your expenses automatically, track your time for your whole team by project, and get organized with reports, communication, and notifications. And getting started with FreshBooks, this is so ridiculously easy. Most people send their first invoice seconds after starting their free trial. It's a click of a button. The same goes for tracking time, managing expenses, collaborating with contractors, and viewing financial reports. It's simple, fast, easy, life-changing. And if you need help at any time, free award-winning customer service is a phone call or an email away. I've used it, it works. And if you ever have second thoughts, don't worry. On top of their free trial for Entree Architect listeners, you get a free 30-day money-back guarantee, so you don't ever have to worry about choosing FreshBooks. So give it a try. It's free for 30 days. Just visit entrearchitect.com/FreshBooks and then let them know that we sent you by sharing Entree Architect in the How Did You Hear About Us section. That's entrearchitect.com/FreshBooks to access your free unlimited 30-day trial. So RCAT and FreshBooks, please visit our platform sponsors today and thank them for supporting you, the Entree Architect community. So you go through that process, you put in the offer, offer's accepted.
Right.
You have acquired the land.
Correct. So what's next is we have 12 months now that we have to pay these two individuals back.
Clock is ticking.
That's right. And the way we know we're going to pay them back is with a construction loan. So that means we have 12 months to design and permit the project and go out and get a construction loan. So the clock is ticking. So for those next 12 months, it's a race. You know, you got to design the project. In this particular case, we're subdividing land. So we added a whole nother process, public hearings, that sort of thing. And then go to a bank and try to get a construction loan. In the interim, you know, there's a lot of fees that have to be paid, including us as the architects. And this is where we participate in the development. So our fee was basically loaned to the development through a promissory note, which basically says, you know, we will get paid on the back end. And that's how we're participating in the development. And that's how I would suggest that everyone else, or it's one way of doing it. There's, again, many ways to skin the cat. And the other fees, you know, the structural engineer, the soils engineer, you know, permits, fees, all that, you do need equity to pay for that. In this particular case, it was about $800,000. And so that has to be borrowed. And so now you have to reach out to other sources of funding, and it's probably going to be private equity, meaning just, you know, somebody who has money to lend. And this is where you can get creative and say, hey, lend me $200,000 and I'll give you 15%, you know, or, you know, some share of the profit at the back end. And so we did that, got raised that money. We're able to get through the permitting and design process, and then it's time to go to the bank and get that construction loan.
And so you, for one, you're leveraging your fee, right?
Correct.
And so you come to the table because you have skills and a license and something that others don't, that your partner may not have. You can take your fee that you would typically, a client would typically pay you, and you can say, hey, you know, banker, you know, I have value here. And then, and so you're putting that into your pro forma. That's your value. And then you're going to get paid at the back end when it's all done.
That's correct.
And then you're going to borrow the money, the rest of the money for the rest of the fees from someone else, another party. And you're saying, give them some equity in the deal in order to give them some incentive to let you borrow that money to pay off those people. And then, so you're doing all of this work. You're designing it, you're permitting it, ready for construction, and then you go get a construction loan.
Yes.
And then you're getting a construction loan for the whole project and then paying back the people that the clock is ticking on?
Yes. This is the great thing, is that the construction loan that you get, so let's say, just using round numbers, this is a $2 million construction cost. You don't go get a $2 million construction loan. You go get, at least in our case, we tried to get a $4 million construction loan. And that's to cover the cost of the land, because we have to pay back those two sellers at the, you know, within those 12 months. We have to pay back the $800,000 that we borrowed for all of the fees, and then we have to pay for construction. Now, that would have been a 100% loan, right? And no bank's going to do that. So what they'll usually do is lend you 75% of the total, and it fluctuates depending on the bank, depending on who you are. You know, it could be 60, 65, 70. But the thing is that in this particular case, we were able to borrow 75% of the total development cost. And now we had the permit in hand and we had the loan. The first thing we did before we start construction is we got to get those sellers out. We got to pay them, because we only had 12 months.
Right.
And if you did it right, you're right at about the 12 month mark, and you pay them the price that they wanted for the land, plus the interest that you negotiated, and now they're out, and what you have left is for construction, and that's it. And if you borrowed a dollar, that's all you have. You cannot go over. You know, it's really, and that's what, this is another skill that you have to learn, is where sometimes you may have to sacrifice some of that beautiful architecture that you designed during that 12 months, because you only were able to borrow a dollar, and that's all.
Because now you're a developer.
That's it, and you have to the dreaded value engineering that you have to do in order to make the project work.
Because everybody else is going to have to get paid at the end.
That's right.
The pro forma
says
your partner's going to get paid, and these investors are going to get paid. And this first project, you may not make a lot, right? At the end of this first first project is the beginning of a future for you.
And so
this is sort of investing in gaining this knowledge, in gaining the experience, gaining a little bit, hopefully if the pro forma works out, gaining a little bit of profit on your end, getting your fee back, you know, getting paid your fee.
Yeah.
But it's not easy, right?
It's not.
There's a lot. Even at this point, you haven't even put the shovel in the ground yet. An entire year of going back and forth, lots of mental calculations, lots of real calculations, lots of risk. Lots of personalities and people and demanding, you know, I want my money now. Why didn't you give me my money? And you haven't even dug a hole yet.
I haven't even touched upon, and these are some, this goes back to the original question, with other things that you need to learn. You know, there's LLCs that you have to form, operating agreements that you have to do. You know, there's risk. So you need insurance, and there's different forms of insurance. There's a lot of moving parts and a lot of things that have to be done. But again, the pro forma is what really you always fall back on. You've been selling it from day one. You sold it to the sellers, look at what I'm going to, because those sellers have to believe that you're going to pay them back in 12 months.
Right.
And who are you? And how do I know I can trust you? And, you know, and, you know, then you got to convince the bank that you can, you know, pay them back. So yeah, it's a lot to do, but I got to tell you, Mark, it's a thrill ride. It's fantastic.
So now you're at the point you've paid off the buyer, the sellers. They're
correct.
They're happy. They've gotten their money. They're living in Tahiti with their money.
Yeah.
You now own this piece of property, these two parcels, and it's been subdivided and it's all ready to go. You've gotten this construction loan from the bank. Mm-hmm. Now what's you start digging?
So now typically these construction loans are 18 months. So you have to pay them back. So within 18 months.
Another clock starts.
Yeah, and another clock starts. Now this is a for sale project in this particular case. If it's going to be a rental project, it's a little different. But in this particular case, 18 months. So you start construction. We hired a general contractor. And by the way, this is one of the reasons we started a GC company at the end of the year last year was because we want to be the general contractor and try to cut out another middleman.
Which you're not doing on this job.
This job,
hired a general contractor to build the project.
Correct. And so, yeah, we're moving forward with the construction. We're about 3 months away from completion. And I think we will be at 15 months at that point. So 15-month construction period. And then so what we're doing now, since we're about 3 months from completion, is we're starting to do we've been doing it all throughout, but now really refining is the marketing, because now we have to sell these things. And it turns out that the market here in LA has just, you know, done very, very well, and prices have increased. And so the performer's gotten better from the time that we started to today.
Which is part of the risk too, right? Because it could be worse, right?
It could have went the other way.
We could have gone into a recession this past year, and, you know, and 25% of the value of what you just purchased is gone. So that's part of it too. There's risk and timing and, you know, fortune telling and, you know, and then some of it is, you know, look at what happened. You know, life is good and it's all
look
good.
Look how smart we are.
Yeah, right. So I had a question I forgot. Okay, keep going. So what's the next step?
So now after obviously we're done and we get our certificates of occupancy, we put them on the market. Hopefully, you know, we'll sell them for the prices that we're thinking that we can. And so now you've got this huge influx of revenue coming in from the sale of the four homes. And then it's all about just paying back two parties, which is basically the bank who gave us the construction loan. And then those folks that lent us the money for the soft cost, that $800,000, whatever's left is left. And that goes to the developer.
You and your partner.
I'm last. Yeah. You'll probably be last in line. And
that's all part of the pro forma. You know that from day one.
That's right. You can know that from the beginning. You know, what the pecking order is of who's going to get paid. And, we'll get our fee plus the interest that we negotiated over time, and then that'll be that.
And I just remember what I was going to ask you. During construction, so once you get that construction loan and you hire a general contractor, is that process much different? Is there anything different between, you know, doing it as a developer and doing it as an architect being hired, other than, you know, obviously you're paying yourself?
I think the only difference is that you're way more involved. Let's say, for example, on a typical project, you may be providing CA services, and you answer an RFI here and there, and you review some shop drawings, and you attend a couple of site meetings, however intense you do that. Here, it's much more involved. I mean, I go to the job sites every week, at least once a week, sometimes more. There are no RFIs, by the way, which is great, because you're there and you just go, well, what's your question? Let's just do this. And you can handle it right then and there on the spot. Typically, because of the fact that, you know, it's kind of, you know, you're the, you know, architects get sued a lot by clients, right? By the developers. But in this case, you are the developer and the client. So you're not really going to, you don't have the huge paper trail and all that stuff. We do have the GC, which we have to kind of still treat as a third party, but it's essentially the same, other than, you are more involved on a day-to-day basis.
Is the more involvement because this is your baby and you want to make sure it's right? Or is there something else about the process and the development process that, that really requires you to be there more?
I think it's both. A part of it is, yeah, because it's your baby and you want to see it go up and you're way more vested into it than a typical, you know, architect owner agreement. Which, by the way, is one of the selling points that you should try to sell when you're looking to partner with a developer and say, hey, because the developer could say, hey, why should I pay you $100,000? Why should I pay you $100,000 plus interest? I can just go hire XYZ firm. They can design this thing for $100,000 and I'm out. And, you know, why should I pay you $100,000 plus interest? And you say, well, because I'm going to be invested. I'm going to be vested in the project. I'm going to care about this project way more than the XYZ firm because I'm very interested in it succeeding and, you know, and then obviously getting me my return at the end. But so part of it, is that it's your baby. But another part of it is that, you know the pro forma. And you know what the parameters are of what can make this project fail or succeed.
Yeah.
And having been there from the very beginning and gone through the whole process, you know where this thing hinges on. And then, you know, and so you kind of have to be there and have to be involved to make sure that it stays, you know, it doesn't go off the rails, you know, it stays on track. So, and it comes with territory.
Yeah. Yeah. So now you have it. Let's say it's all built and it's ready to go and you started your planning for marketing. What are you doing for marketing and how are you planning to sell these four houses?
Throughout the project, we've been, on social media, every now and then posting on Instagram, posting on Twitter. The developer also has his own, handles and social media, footprint. But a lot of it is also your real estate agents. You got to pick some good ones who can get the word out. There's already been interest, as people have driven by and seen it go up
signs and
right,
all that.
Hey, what's going on here? And, you got to have that sign out there. And, there's going to be a big open house and that sort of thing. This happens to be in Hollywood. This project is in Hollywood, very dense area. So it's got good exposure. This is again about that 15 minutes. Yep. If we had gone into an area that we didn't know, we may unwittingly pick the worst corner in the world and nobody sees the project and nobody wants to live there. So, that all kind of comes back to that. And so,
That's going to be my challenge. Anne Marie and I have property in North Carolina that we are going to develop. We've acquired the property already, but it's in the middle of nowhere. It's just south of Charlotte, North Carolina. It's in a great location, and it's growing. And in 10 years, it's going to be in the middle of, the development, or less than that. But as it's being built, it's not on the corner of, Sunset Boulevard. It's in the middle of the woods out in the country in horse farms. And so I think when we start doing this project, it's going to be a lot of social media, probably some video, following the people are going to follow the progress of these projects that we're going to do. Build in these sellers before the project is built, in the way we present it while it's being built. That's our plan anyway. We'll see how that works.
The great thing about the pro forma is that you can build all of that into the pro forma. So, for example, knowing that it's maybe not Sunset Boulevard and it's not the hot spot or whatever term you want to use, you build that into your assumption portion of your pro forma. You can't assume that it's going to get, $1,000 per square foot or whatever it is. You dial it back a notch because of the fact that you're here. And so when someone says, hey, Mark, this project is out in the boonies. Why would I want? And you say, well, I've accounted for that. Look at how I've accounted for that. And so it shows that you're aware of the fact of your location, and B, you show that even with those, with that issue, the pro forma still works.
Yeah, and you could put in costs for that as well, right?
That's right.
If you're putting in your architectural fees, you could put your marketing fees in. To that as well. I can get paid for that marketing that I'm doing at the back end. It could be a value that we get paid for at the end.
That's right.
Yeah. So where are you now? Let's go back to your project because we're going to wrap up here. Where are you now, and where do you hope to be when this is all done? And then what's your next step? Because this is your first project. This is the beginning of the rest of what you do. How are you going to end this one, and where are you going on the next one?
Well, it's funny because we started this one in late 2015, I want to say, and we are framing the second one now. We're on the second floor framing the second one. We have another one that we're about to submit for permits. Looking at my calendar here in early April, mid-April. We have the GC company, and we're now starting to look at larger projects. Los Angeles just passed the state of California passed a lot of housing initiatives. And so we're starting to look at those. And, we're looking at moving on to larger apartment projects. There's a high demand for apartments here in LA. And so we're going to start
rent, right?
Which it would rent.
So different. Maybe we'll come back and talk about that.
Yes, it's a different ball game.
Selling in the way versus renting.
Money flows there.
Yeah.
That's the next step for us.
So with your current project, you have four houses being built. You've built one, right? That's what you just said. So you've built one. You started a second.
Actually, this project here, this will be, because I partnered with another developer. It's going back to that big developer going back to 2006. So this one here, I think, is fourth or fifth, first with this particular partner, but fourth or fifth that I've worked on. And as a matter of fact, this guy that I partnered with, he bought one of the houses from a previous project that I partnered on. He was one of the owners, and then we became friends, and that's how that took off. But yeah, so we're moving along at a good clip, I would say.
Yeah. So you're taking, so each project,
yes.
So this is what I'm trying to get to is with each project, you're gaining more knowledge. You're making more money. Are you taking most of that money or all of that money and rolling it into the next project? And how much are you benefiting? Are you pulling some of it out for yourself? How are you? And this may be a personal question. You don't have to answer it, but
no, that's fine. So in this particular case, so with this project, once it sells, obviously we're going to get, I guess, the big payday, right? At some point. And so part of that is just going to go to savings, just to, always have that nest egg. And then the other part, the idea is to now, contribute more to the development, contribute more to the pro forma, and become a bigger stakeholder in the deal. And obviously, for obvious reasons. And the idea is to eventually, have enough of those paydays, and then, and hopefully always be ready. What's the saying about opportunity and luck and preparedness? I don't know what it is, but the idea is if something comes along that I may say, hey, wait a minute, this may be the one that I can do,
right?
Just Pamela and I, we want to be ready for that. And so that's kind of
right. So with every project, you end up a little bit more investment and a little bit more equity and a little bit more out and at the back end. And every time you do it, the balance shifts a little bit, and eventually you're the top dog, and eventually you're the developer that's at the top of the list rather than at the bottom of the list.
Correct. That's right.
That's the
goal. Banks will always be at the top, but at least be second.
Yeah. After the banks. Right. Right. Well, maybe someday you won't need the banks. You'll be making so much. But even then, you said before, even then, you don't do it cash. You always use the banks, right?
Always use the banks because it's just better. It's just smarter to leverage. You can take a dollar and make it feel like $100 rather than just using $100.
Right. And plus, if you had that money, you could be investing in that money elsewhere with more interest than you would have gotten by investing it in your project.
That's right.
Yeah. So very, very interesting. We'd love to have you come back and talk more about selling versus renting.
I could talk about this forever. And there's just so much to talk about.
Well, I have lots to learn for myself as well. So I definitely will do that. your website before, your website is CandSDesign.com. So people can go check these buildings out. Yeah. You're on Twitter, you're on Instagram. What are your handles on Twitter and Instagram?
On Twitter, it's at CSDesignLA. And for Instagram, it's C, but then the A-N-D is spelled out. Yep. And S Design.
We'll put it on the show notes. So just go to the show notes for the show. Yep. We'll have links to all that. Again, that architect developer series on Medium, super valuable. That's something that Danny could easily sell. It's there for you to go check out for free. Medium.com/@CSDesignLA. Go check those out. Before we wrap up, Danny, I want to ask you the question that I ask everybody. What's one thing that a small firm architect can do today to build a better business for tomorrow?
I think it's something that I did, which is play a simple what if game and say, what if, I mean, it'd take you 10 minutes and say, what if, and try to think of something that's, you know, maybe a little bit beyond your comfort zone and say, what if I did that? And then try to think about what's the worst thing that could happen if you did that. And I think you'd be surprised that it's really not that bad, and it may push you to say, well, let's do it.
Yeah.
So that's what I would suggest.
That's great advice. I would add to that, write it down.
Yeah.
Write that story out. Write what's the worst thing that could happen in words, then read it back to yourself, and then see how you feel about it.
Yeah.
Before we wrap up, you have a handout. You put together a handout that sort of describes a whole process of development with all your numbers and everything in there. You want to just talk about that a little bit about what
so
that is?
I wanted to give folks listening a handout for this particular project. It's not so much a broad overview of architect as developer, but for this particular project, and it's an Excel spreadsheet, I've tried to make it as easily understandable as I could. And it just basically, gives you a project summary at the top, how much things cost, what we were expecting to sell, the price of the land, the different loans that we got, the money that we borrowed, the revenue on the back end, and what the profit is. It's essentially, a bank book of the project. And if anyone is interested in looking at it and they have some questions, they can always email me. Reach out to me on Twitter or whatever, and I can try it. But hopefully it's easy enough to follow. If anybody is interested, they can take a look at it.
Yeah, you can.
For this particular project.
Yeah, it's specific for this project, and it's a PDF download, and it sort of just, talks about this specific project and has real numbers in it. So it's entrearchitect.com/architect-developer. If you go there, you put in your email address and we'll email you the PDF. entrearchitect.com/architect-developer. Danny, thanks for coming back here and sharing your knowledge here at Entree Architect Podcast.
Thank you, Mark. And again, as I always say, thank you for what you do. I don't know how you do it, but thank you very much.
I don't know how I do it either, but I appreciate that tremendously. Thanks for being part of the community.
Thank you.
Okay, if you are interested in becoming an architect developer, or you know someone who wants to become an architect developer, or you are an architect developer, this is the episode that you want to share. You want to share this episode with a friend because Danny just laid it straight out there. This is how you become an architect developer. And it's not easy, as Danny explained. There's a whole lot of work involved. But if you want to do it, this is the episode that you want to follow. This is entrearchitect.com/episode215-215. Go share that with a friend. Hey, and not only do you get valuable audio content in with this episode, you get a downloadable worksheet. Danny breaks down this whole project that he's talking about step by step with all the numbers. He shares everything in there. So entrearchitect.com/architect-developer to download that free worksheet PDF. Go check that out. entrearchitect.com/architect-developer is where you go get that. Hey, and don't forget to go listen to my friends over at ArchiSpeak and Inside the Firm, two great podcasts. If you love Entree Architect Podcast, you are also going to love ArchiSpeak and my friends over at Inside the Firm. ArcaSpeakPodcast.com and InsideTheFirmPodcast.com. Go subscribe right now. And the Entree Architect community on Facebook. It is by far the best, probably the largest small firm architect Facebook group in the world. Absolutely the most positive, most interactive. You post a question, you'll get answers. Go join the Entree Architect community on Facebook. It's a private Facebook group. It's free, but it's private. You have to request membership. You have to be an architect or an architecture student. So go check that out at entrearchitect.com/group. And my name is Mark R. LePage, and I'm an entrepreneur architect, and I encourage you to build a better business so you can be a better architect. Love, learn, and share what you know. That's how you're going to do it. That's how we get through this world, one step at a time. Love, learn, share. Thanks for listening. Have a great week.
From historic homes to modern architecture, brick is one of the most popular building materials around the world.
How to allow the house to bridge the gap between the history of the site, the approachability of this kind of architecture in this kind of neighborhood, and the sort of nostalgia of materiality for the client's past, right? And brick really started to provide an answer for that.
Hi, I'm Doug Pat, and this is Design Vault. There aren't many materials that easily blend with any style and context, but brick does just that. I've seen some extraordinary work with brick, so when Glengarry approached me about hosting this podcast, I couldn't say no.
Typically, Tudor-style houses from outside are just stunningly gorgeous piece of structure, and when you go in, it's just sad.
Yeah.
Dark. And that is not going to happen with my approach to design.
I speak with industry leaders and share inspiring stories behind their work and ingenious design.
You'll see brick that's fashioned into basket weave patterns, sawtooth patterns. What's known in England as diapering.
Doesn't sound like you knew them per se, right? They found you through relationships that you had with other.
Well, wait, Doug, there's more.
Okay.
We'll go behind the scenes to understand process and even the inspiration that sparked the design.
You know, I think we were inspired by all the factory buildings in Dumbo. I mean, that is the kind of period of significance, that early American factory building.
Design Vault by Glengarry. Visit glengarry.com/design-vault or search for Design Vault wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe now to stretch your imagination.
Attention architects and creative minds, get ready to supercharge your brand with Build Your Brand, the podcast that's unlocking the secrets of branding success for creatives. Hey there, it's Mark R. LePage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my friend, architect marketing expert, Jeff Eccles at Build Your Brand podcast, where he explores the captivating stories of the world's top brands and transforms their lessons into powerful moves for small firm architects and creatives like you. In season one, Jeff shares the thrilling tale of Southwest Airlines, where he dissects their journey to the summit and distills it into strategies tailor-made for you.
It's important to keep in mind that companies like Southwest compete in the real world, just like you, and face real-world challenges, just like you. You might be surprised at how similar those challenges are to the struggles that you grapple with on a day-to-day basis.
Don't miss out on your blueprint for success. Subscribe, tune in, and let's build your brand together.
You may have noticed that the very best brands in the world are also known for having somewhat unique corporate cultures. That's often the glue that holds everything together when they encounter those rough spots.
We don't do it because it inconveniences the passengers to whom we are primarily dedicated, the short-haul frequent flyer.
Follow the link in the show notes to subscribe to Build Your Brand today. Remember, no matter the size, the journey's the same. Your brand's journey to the top starts here.